I'm just going to hit record.
It's the 10th of August. This is our first module 9 call, two weeks of looking at the client's compass. I've got a new hairdo, a new standing desk, whole new energy. Feels quite different, but I quite enjoy spending at least half the day just kind of standing. It's really shifting how I'm showing up, I think, a little bit. So, just a fun little detail in case you're thinking, is she standing? So module 9 is the biggest module. If you've spent any time with the module workbook, you're probably like, wow, there's loads of tools and there's lots to absorb and this is a whole new concept and I'm not sure where I'm going with it yet. It's completely fine. Don't panic. You're going to be fine with it. It's very much we're bringing together a lot of the learning that we've been doing and kind of building on that. So the first three modules were really setting the kind of theoretical framework or the evidence-based framework for a lot of our work. The next three modules were all about looking at how self-doubt manifests and why and where it comes from and how to work with it with our clients. And we looked at your particular experience of self-doubt. And then in these last three modules, which we're right in the heart of, we are looking at this expanded model of self-belief, of what does it mean to support our clients to create more self-belief, to cultivate that, to look at the resources that they already possess. And so we're right in the heart of that now. So the conflict tools, the compass tools, and next module 10 is all about courage-based planning. These three modules are all about everything I know about developing healthy self resources for the client and of course for us as well. So this module is really, I'd like you to start thinking of it as a kind of pick and mix. You can play with the tools, and we'll do that today with your clients, with people you know. Find some folks who want to, you know, try this stuff out. And the idea is that you have some resources available to you, some tools available to you, so that as your clients are kind of getting more comfortable with the idea of their protective beliefs, they're getting more comfortable with the idea that they have all these different parts, right? That they are starting to look at the healthier parts, right? We have this it's kind of common understanding that we have a bias towards negativity, right, as a sort of survival technique. So it's surprising to me that a lot of us as coaches, because I think we have a positivity bias, right? We want to work with people on the upside, that sometimes you might feel a little bit of resistance when you're working with someone with self-doubt to actually start working with these tools of having them build up their self-belief. So this is just to put that out there, that we are moving into these last three modules that are very much about, you know, okay, and then what, right? Once we've understood, oh, these are the protective beliefs that are driving us, driving our clients, how do we then resource them to kind of live differently? So all of these tools, and there's pretty much two tools for each of the each of the compass points. So there's about 8 or 9 in total. Each of them are designed to help you to support your clients, give you both something to do as a way of talking about these healthy self resources. Okay. So it's very much a pick and mix. You won't need to use all of them. It might take you even 6 months, a year to even use all of them with different clients. These are the tools that I've been developing and refining as I've kind of given myself permission to do that, right? To just create my own tools and see what happens. And I've used them with one-to-one clients, with big groups even. Particularly like the heart map is something that I use in, I used to run a one-day workshop, and we would do the life map, the heart map and another map. But the heart map was great, just, and that's in the Lover resource, which is all about looking at relationships. And it was really fun to do that in a group. So these are the tools that are designed to really help your clients feel resourced. Yeah, so we go into them with some kind of enthusiasm, and we're excited to share them with our clients. And they, my experience is that they kind of say, oh, this is another way of looking at this. This is a way of putting this idea into some kind of order so that my mind can organize around it and I can start to see myself in it in a new way. Okay. So I'm just going to share my screen so we've got something to look at. Okay. So what we're going to talk about today is just going to just dive into a little bit about the purpose and the aims of this module and of the compass. We're going to spend this week talking about your compass and next week about the client's compass. So this week is very much like we're going to play with this ourselves. And we're going to do a little bit of coaching. So I'm going to coach maybe one or two of you just to demonstrate some of the tools. We're going to gather a little bit of raw material and see what comes up, and then we'll demonstrate those together. And I found that's just the best way to just start working with this stuff. And we'll set some homework for practice pods. So at least by, if you have time, and you may or may not have time to watch the other classes today, it's quite likely that we'll cover most of the tools over the course of the three classes. We might do one or two tools twice, who knows? So we'll see where we get to. So I just want to kind of talk a little bit about this particular model, this tool set, so, and why it's important. So as self-belief coaches, we unconditionally believe in the client's healthy self, right? We know that's the part of them that brought them to coaching. We know that they have these resources of self-belief, self-acceptance, self-worth, and self-trust, even if they can't see those qualities in themselves or they don't recognize them. Right. Even if they feel like, oh, that's not something that I live with on a daily basis. It's not something I'm even conscious of. But we know that they have those qualities. And I use this metaphor in the module workbook about sometimes they're kind of in the soil, right? They're sort of seeds in the soil. They're not really sprouting yet. They're not in full bloom or showing green shoots, these different levels of kind of development. But we know that the seed is in the soil. We trust it's there even if the client can't see it. Equally, I don't think it matters how well developed these qualities are. These tools can support your clients. So I recently did use the boundaries tool quite a lot. And I recently did a heart map about 3 months ago. And I was like, oh, right, okay, cool. And I've done this, you know, half a dozen times over the years. And I just did it for myself because I was just a bit confused about a couple of things. And it really helped me to see, oh, yeah, okay, that's pretty cool. And I would say that of all of the resources, that the Lover, the self-acceptance, is probably my most developed. So I just want to like reassure you, sometimes I'll use these tools with clients a couple of times, and sometimes I'll work with people and then there'll be a break of a few years and then they'll come back and we'll revisit it and it still is effective. So this is the compass. This is what it looks like. This is the self-belief coaching framework, which you all should have, hopefully, by now. And this is our model that we're working with. So we have the healthy self in the middle that is whole, you know, keeping an eye on the protector, taking care of the protector. And the healthy self has access to these four compass points, these four qualities or resources. And of each of these, each of the compass points, there are these three little references which give you a sense of what is it that compass point is really, you know, what are the resources that allows us to access? And there's always a shadow in the same way that the healthy self has the protector. Each of the compass points has a shadow, and that's related to the archetypes as well. So kind of, if you think about it, the further away you are from the healthy self, the more self-doubt you're likely to be experiencing, right? If you're kind of living in the outer circle, you're probably living life, or your clients are living life according to archetypal patterns and beliefs, right? Beliefs and behaviors that are driven by these. And as you come in, you may start to experience quite a lot of these protectors that show up. But as we get closer to the healthy self and we're living inside this main white circle, that's where our lives start to shift and change, our clients' lives start to shift and change. So it's this metaphor of a compass. And the aim here is threefold, right? We want to help the client feel reassured, right? Self-doubt's not created in a vacuum. There are damn good reasons for it. We want them to help them reflect, so to make sense of their experiences. So all of these tools are designed to help them kind of bring up what's going on, put some words around it, maybe an image around it for them to be able to really interrogate and explore. And we also want them to feel resourced, to be able to lean into their healthy self to take the next step, which may not be an action, right? The next step may be about feeling something more. It may be about being something different, as much as it is about doing something. Yeah. So leaning into the healthy self, the reason that we want them to do that is so that the clients get to access the parts, the helpful parts of self-belief, self-acceptance, self-worth, and self-trust. But most importantly, that they're to see that they're always in choice, that they have a choice about how they're going to respond to any situation, any particular circumstance, any context. Yeah. And what I've found is that this means that the outcomes of the coaching expand, right? So yes, the client is going to bring the thing that they came to coaching for, but they're also going to, after working with a self-belief coach, grow their awareness of their survival strategies, of their protective beliefs and behaviors. They're going to be able to positively impact their sensitivity to perceived psychological risks. So every time they get inside that loop, they're going to have a greater understanding of what's causing their self-doubt alarm to go off and interrupt that early so they can get out of that loop. And over time, they can expand their self-concept. That becomes more of the automatic response that come from the healthy self, right? So rather than maybe something fails in their business, they send out a marketing email and no one responds, they get crickets, right? Rather than the automatic response, meaning I'm not destined for this, nobody wants this, all of that negative critical self-talk. Instead, they're looking at, oh, what didn't I say? How do I connect with my clients? What is it I need to do differently, better, more of? You can still feel that kind of, I wish that had gone differently, but it's no longer a reason to quit, stop, stand on the sidelines, beat themselves up, or kind of opt out. Right. So over time, this builds a kind of new self-concept, one that can hold the risks of disappointment and rejection and conflict and failure, all of that can be held because it's held in a safe container of the healthy self. The healthy self knows that, that it's not over. There's more to come. There's more that they can be and do. So I'm hoping that gives a kind of sense of, why this stuff is helpful, what the long-term impact of kind of working with someone on their compass resources can be. And I thought what we would do today is to start playing with what this can look like for us, and sort of start to demonstrate how the compass can be super helpful for your own stuff that comes up, how you can self-coach as much as work with folks in your practice pods, as much as you work with your clients as well. So what we're going to do today is I'm going to offer some reflection questions. So you can start to gather a little bit of raw material And then I'm going to ask for some volunteers for coaching on what comes up. And we'll be able to use those challenges that come up for you to demonstrate aspects of the compass for everybody. So that's what we're going to do. Okay. So hopefully you've all got a pen and paper. I'm just going to make sure I've got the questions I have. Okay. So the first question is it's really just to look at what are the main challenges in your life right now? In your business, your relationships, your practice, your mother-in-law. List a few things that you're noodling on right now. What would you like to be different in your life? Were you holding yourself back? What feels challenging? Looks like you've all got nice big juicy lists. They're all writing away. Okay, so once you've got a little list going, just reflect over the list of challenges that you have in your life right now, and just choose one that you think you want to pull apart a little bit more in this exercise. Just underline that for you. For yourself. Doesn't matter what you choose. Notice if you decide something is too big and too hard. And just name that for yourself. So my current challenge is, kind of bottom line it. Like, could you put it in a sentence? My current challenge is... And then answer for yourself, I wish I was able to, what do you wish you were able to do, be, say, change. I wish I was able to. Notice if you're coming up with the good coach answer. So my current challenge is I wish I was able to. And then the third, there's only four. The third one is the reason this is a challenge is why can't you do what you want to be able to do? Why is this a challenge for you? And the final reflection, when I think about this challenge, my protector believes what? Okay, everyone got something that sort of feels like, oh yeah, that's pretty juicy. That's kind of, that's something that's real, that's happening right now. Yeah. So, and the reason to get this raw material out is usually when we're working with clients, right, we would probably send out a pre-session couple of questions, you know, something to say, you know, what's happening for you right now? Has anything changed since our last session? Is there something you want to talk about in this session? So we would have, you know, a reasonable idea of where the client's coming from in terms of what they're hoping to spend their next session with us talking about. So we're doing the same thing here. I'm just doing it live so that it's alive for us as we coach. But when you're working with a client, you know, I always recommend just sending out that pre-work. It helps both of you to kind of reflect and, you know, get a bit intentional about how you want to spend that time together. So is anyone feeling like, yeah, I'd like some help on this? I would like to be coached today. We just need one person. Walk away from the session feeling different, maybe feeling better, hopefully. Who's feeling it? Just give us a wave. Yeah, Julia? Yeah. All right, lovely. Tell me, kind of bottom line the challenge for me. What's going on for you?
So bottom line is that I'm feeling unsafe, is what I wrote, in growing a new side of my business. Yeah, that's the way I phrased it.
A fascinating way to phrase it. Yeah, that's cool. So I'm curious to know more. Like, can you like just expand on that a little bit? Tell us where the unsafety is coming from and what's the part of the business you want to grow.
Yeah, so I am running currently a beta offer of tarot coaching, where I help people develop their own relationship with tarot, and I'm loving it. It's really fun. So far, it's going really well, but I have a lot of fear around that. A lot of kind of imposter syndrome. And there's a lot that's been coming up throughout this whole course as well around this idea of uniqueness and like a fear of being copied, but also a fear of me copying other people. There's a lot of kind of entanglement in there. And a lot of protective belief narratives of like, who do you think you are to do this? You're not special. Like, you don't have, you don't have anything really to offer, et cetera.
Okay. Nice. So that's fun to have both of those conflicting kind of ideas in there, isn't it? I just want to share the compass model with you, Julia, and tell me like where do you think this challenge is living? What is it? Where is the lack right now? Is it where does it feel like? I've got a theory, but I'm curious to know what yours is, and then we'll figure it out together.
Yeah, I think it's in kind of both the self-belief area, kind of in the leadership category, and also in the self-worth area, of kind of taking up space.
Yeah, I feel that too. Yeah, I'm also feeling like it's comes down to self-trust, right? Like, can I trust myself here? And the thing is, right? Like, just for yours and everyone who's watching your beautiful demonstration here, this works as a system, right? In the same way that the protectors kind of work together as a bit of a system, these aspects are not standalone resources. So they'll be bleeding into all different kinds of things. So exactly what you say, I think it's self-belief, it's probably self-worth as well. And I'm seeing some self-trust stuff. There's probably self-acceptance in there as well. And so all I would offer is it can sometimes be a little tricky to think, well, where do we start? And what I would offer is it really doesn't matter because these different parts are all probably going to come into it, right? So what I'm thinking about as Julia's coach is what would be the most useful way to look at this challenge, right? Of, can I do this? All of these conflicting ideas that are coming in. It's like you've kind of got all different stories happening at the same time. And I'm thinking, Julia, that we need to what might help you is to create a bit of a container for all of those conflicting stories so that we can see that you're in choice. How does that sound to you?
Yeah, I don't know what that looks like, but I'm willing to try.
Cool. Okay. Thank you for trusting me. So what I would offer is that the tool that I would be really keen to use with Julia is all. I'm just going to make sure I've got the right content up here. We're changing some of the names of these things. Is the dilemma and decisions container, right? And it's about taking a wide perspective of a dilemma that the client's facing. So they can kind of see, like, where is my own wisdom here? What do I really want to do? What are the conflicting voices that are outside of me or that just won't help me right now? So this is part of the sage. And I've done this so many times, so I'm just going to make sure that I've got this up so that I'm giving you consistent information here. So the idea is that we kind of allow the client to help us create a container for all the different voices that are going on. And this is great if you're working with someone who's just feels like, my sense is, Julia, that there is this sense of kind of overwhelm with all of these different things, all of these different ideas. Tell me what is happening for you.
It's not a sense of overwhelm, because in this case, overwhelm is often how my protector shows up.
Right.
But in this case, I actually have, like, I've actually been taking action and I have clear action on how I'm going to continue.
Yeah.
It's more the feelings around, as in, like, I'm doing stuff, but so I'm not overwhelmed,
yeah.
But I am feeling very vulnerable and kind of frustrated,
yeah,
with this fear of, like, around this fear around scarcity of my creativity, around worrying that I'm not unique enough or that others may copy me. Like, that's the thing that I really don't like being here.
Yeah.
Like when you wrote, I wish I was able to, I wrote, I wish I was able to like claim it.
Right.
Instead of having this fear of, like, seeming like I'm a special snowflake, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, cool. I get it.
Yeah.
So this is really parts work,
okay,
right, in terms of what we are seeing. You've got these kind of conflicting, the vulnerability will create a sort of sense of lots of different conflicting stories, and often this can just feel, this can be like a way for our protectors to sort of keep us just either not taking action or making that action feel really overwhelming or just a lot to be taking on. Does that resonate with you, Julia?
Yeah.
And it can feel, I don't know, my sense is, and having done this with a few people, is it can feel a bit like I'm not really sure where I am in all of this. It just feels like there's a lot of different ideas and I'm not sure what I actually want to have happen or what I want to believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So tell me about these different parts. So we've got a frustrated part that wants to just be creative, I heard you say. Yeah. We've got a sort of fearful part that others might copy me. The vulnerable part. What's the vulnerable part worried about?
The copying.
Right. Right. The part of you that wants to just claim it?
Yeah.
Yeah. What else is going on? What have you written down?
I want to claim it, but I'm worried that I will be judged and people will think that, like, I don't have a right to claim it.
Yeah.
You know, like, that it's, yeah, like, who am I to say that it's actually a special, interesting thing, or like that it's, because it feels like it's new and different to me.
Yeah.
And that, and then I'm like, oh, but maybe that's not true.
Right, right, right. Coming up.
Pardon?
What else is coming up?
Mm. I think that's the main stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm curious to know, like, is there, like, when you think about the work itself, mm-hmm. like actually doing this work, yeah. and you said at the start it's something you really love.
Yeah.
Is there a part of you that's just like wanting to do the work, like love the work?
Yeah. Yes, for sure. I mean, and I do, like, so far doing it, I love it. And I wonder if the fear there is also, like, I love it so much,
yeah,
that I'm scared it's not going to continue.
Right, 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 right. So there's a part that loves this work, and there's a part that's fearful. I will lose this work. Yeah, yeah. And I'm wondering what you're thinking about your clients, your prospective clients that you're going to work with. Mm-hmm. Is there a voice or a story around them?
I think it comes down to, like, at the moment, I've just been thinking of my current clients, but I do think I have a, similarly to kind of worry that it's not going to continue, I do think I have this idea of, like, nobody's going to want this, or, which is like a very confusing, conflicting feeling of, like, being scared of it being copied and also scared that nobody's going to look at it.
Yeah. 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 So no one will want this. And so no one will want this. And then what did you say about your work with your current clients?
Oh, I just said that I've mainly been focusing on that.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And when you think about your current clients and doing this work, what's the emotion that comes up for you, or the?
Oh, just excited. So excited. It's so much fun. And it's already been so wonderful.
What if this was successful? Is there like a fantasy vision that you have for this work?
Yeah, I mean, if it was successful, it would be kind of booked out, and people would recommend my work to mm-hmm. others as well. And I see it as allowing people to kind of step more into their own intuition. Like, it's the success story for me would be, like, giving kind of people permission to live their intuition the way that they feel like they want to. And then hopefully that would turn into a sustainable business for me that would support me financially.
Yeah. So how do you feel about this being successful?
Vulnerable, right, about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, because it's...
vulnerability feel like?
What else does vulnerable feel like? Yeah, it's that same feeling of kind of feeling unsafe, like it's all kind of out of my control at this point. Well, and forever, really. It's all, there's a lot of it that's out of my control. And yeah, I do want it to happen. Like, I am hopeful of the dream. Yeah. And I feel very protective of it as well, because it's taken me a long time to find my own dream as well. It's not it's something that I've spent the past few years not having. And so I feel very like, oh, well, this is,
yeah,
I feel very protective.
Yeah. 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 I'm feeling that you're expressing that in a way, it helps me feel it. So, yeah. Yeah. And so the question at the center of this, how can I feel safe? As I launch or as I share this work.
Yeah.
So what we've done, Julia, is just help you get out on paper all of the things that are going on around this feeling of unsafety.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
It is a lot.
I wonder, like, I just want to read these back to you. Just tell me if anything's missing. See, you described feeling excited to work with your current clients. Frustrated, you want to just be creative. This work is new and different to you. Is that true for others? There's some vulnerability around success being out of your control. You want to claim it. You love this work. There's a sense of being fearful that you'll lose it, worried that you'll be judged if you do claim it. What if no one wants this? Vulnerable around others potentially copying you and feeling protective of this work. Does that feel like it kind of sums everything up? Is there anything you want to add in?
No, I think that kind of covers all of the, all of the feelings.
And does this like remind you of anything? This sort of feeling of this mix of feeling, unsafety.
I think just generally being creative as a child. Like, I guess this always kind of comes up around creative work because it's such a kind of intimate process.
Yeah.
Creating something, and you kind of pour your heart into it. And so it always feels scary.
Yeah.
Sharing. So that's kind of what's kind of coming up. Sharing my writing when I was younger. For like the first few times.
Right. So sharing when you were younger. So there's perhaps a younger part as well that's around in the background. Like, oh, this feels really vulnerable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so.
And I always, you know how old that part is?
Like, I'm kind of getting two ages. Like around the 7-8 mark.
Yeah.
But also the kind of 14-15 mark.
Yeah. A bit scary to share creativity. Did you have anyone copy your work?
Yeah.
When has that happened?
In small ways, not in like blatant, mm-hmm. you know. But yeah, when I was younger, kind of especially in like, it wasn't necessarily kind of my work, but
right.
at school often, like I would do stuff and then people would copy that and like use that stuff right. too.
What did you make that mean?
That it meant that I wasn't unique. Like if someone could then take my stuff.
Right.
Then I didn't get to keep it.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm not unique and I don't get to keep the things I create. Yeah. Does that feel familiar to what's happening here too?
Yes, very much so. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm curious to know, like, what else could be true about that idea?
Yeah, I mean,
so good someone else wanted it for themselves. Comes to mind, right?
And it's so frustrating because it's like, technically I know this and yet I don't believe it, but it's that it comes from me and it comes from my creativity. Yeah. So it's not like that stops.
Yeah.
You know, like if someone does want to, and also that it is inspiring then. to someone else.
Yep.
And if someone is interested in it, that doesn't take away from me at all.
Yeah.
So I don't know why it feels like it does.
Well, it's like you're describing your work as it's a very visceral extension of you.
Yeah.
So that makes complete sense, right? Like if that's coupled with you, when someone copies you, if someone copies you, there's a sense that they're taking a part of you away.
Yeah.
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 Is that possible though?
No. I mean, it's not. And even if they do, like that doesn't, I understand that also like that comes from a different place. Like when people do copy others, it's because they're feeling insecure and they're wanting to find something and they can never do it like you can do it, yeah, because that's just the way life works. But it's one thing of kind of understanding that intellectually.
Yeah.
And then,
and both things can be true, right? There is the intellectual understanding of it and the emotional response when it happens, which feels quite visceral and primal.
Yeah. Yes.
And so, but the intellectual understanding of it can help inform that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious to know, like this sense of, this is the word that sticks out for me, control. You know, I get the sense that there's like, oh, if I was just in charge of this and I could just manage everybody's responses, it would all be a little bit easier.
Yeah.
does that feel familiar to you?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what's letting go of control is my life work, pretty much.
Right. Yeah. And interestingly, kind of for me, that comes down to self-trust.
Yeah.
Because actually, we can't control anything except what we think and feel and say and do. That's it. Unfortunately.
Yes.
Right? It would be so much better if we were in charge, really. We could probably sort this whole planet out. I think it's really great to just recognize, oh, the, you know, safety for me feels like control.
Yeah. Yeah.
And can I just be with the idea that I don't have control, except in how I take care of myself?
It always comes back to that, doesn't it?
Always. Yeah. Because we can't do anything else, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I'm wondering if this is the right question, I guess, is the part for me. Well, perhaps not. This might be the right question, but it feels like the answer is probably at the moment, I've just got to control everything. or, you know, think about all the things that I want to be in control of, but I know I don't have control of.
Yeah.
How can you actually feel safe in this work?
I mean, just focus on doing it rather than like thinking about all the stuff that could happen around it and just kind of, yeah, because it's that sense of, if I think about all the things that that can go wrong, then that feels like controlling it, you know. And I also have a sense of like wanting to control my feelings around it as well.
Yeah.
And so probably like let myself feel those feelings.
Yeah.
And just focus on the work rather than, yeah, everything around it.
Yeah. So that's a fantastic approach, right? I'm just going to shorten our little container here so we've got some idea of, so you can feel what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can kind of let go of control. And that's a practice, right? That's not just a decision.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I notice I'm trying to control things. I'm trying to control what's going to happen, how I feel. Okay, I'm just going to allow myself to tune into what I'm feeling here.
Mm-hmm.
Right, which from the compass perspective is really self-acceptance. I'm going to accept that I have all these feelings. And there's a part of me that really wants to control this.
Yeah.
It's okay that part's there. That makes sense. I can accept it. Yeah. How else could you feel safe as you're bringing this work to life?
I think just kind of root down into like things that feel like self-care as well. You know, like looking at places where I do actually have control.
Okay, leaning back into control. Yeah, yeah.
Leaning back into control, but in a good way.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
Like stuff that makes me feel calmer. So like exercise, nourishment.
Which is all self-worth, right? How do you take care of the space you take up?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, beautiful. So these things are self-acceptance. This is self-worth. I'm also thinking about a really practical thing.
Mm-hmm.
You could put a boundary around copying.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You could use the boundaries tool to make a decision ahead of time when you're out of the emotion of it all. What will you do if that happens? Right? From your healthy adult self, taking care of the times that happened when you were a child, like you're so much more resourced now. What would you do? What is the process that you would follow if someone copied you? And you just kind of set it out so that it's like, okay, that boundary is now, okay, if this happens, this is what I'll do. And this is why it's important to me. These are the kind of questions that we're asking in the boundaries work. No one else has to change. No one else has to do anything different. It's not about controlling anyone. It's not about ultimatums. A boundary is just, this is what I'll do to take care of me should this happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you a really practical kind of tool of what you might want to just have up your back pocket.
Mm-hmm.
This is this beautiful, creative, important, helpful, nourishing, soulful work, and it's your business, right? And so the boundary stuff is really about advocating for your work,
mm-hmm.
for yourself. So deciding, okay, if I see someone copying, I'm going to have a third party look at that and just to see if there's anything I can do. I might engage with a lawyer to start with to see if there are intellectual property stuff or trademarking or copywriting that would be relevant for me.
Mm-hmm.
Advocate for myself and my work in this way. And so what starts to happen then is rather than these being ephemeral thoughts, this sort of amorphous cloud of woe, right, as you start to come up with healthy self-resources suggesting actions you can take, things you can do to take care of you so that this can actually become the way you're living.
Mm.
So you start to notice, oh, I'm feeling safer in this work. It probably won't ever go away, that feeling of vulnerability completely, but maybe it's not meant to.
Yeah.
And that comes back to the self-acceptance part of, can I accept that there's a part of me that is feeling vulnerable?
Mm.
How can I take care of that part?
Yeah. That all makes a lot of sense.
Right?
Yeah.
And so what we're doing with this kind of container is just allowing you to give voice to all the things that are floating around and taking up energy and space and time. Yeah. Right. And probably sucking a bit of creative juice from you as well, I suspect.
Yeah.
You get to put them all on a page so that you can see what's actually going on and why it feels so sort of weirdly conflicting and unsafe and a bit mm-hmm. murky.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So we answer the question. We try and formulate a question. Figure out all the different things that are going on. And then look at, well, what can I do? How can I answer this from my healthy self? How can mm-hmm. I feel safe as I share this work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very helpful to see it all kind of laid out, because you're right, when you're living with it, it's really easy to pretend that you understand everything that's going on. But it does actually feel like a big amorphous cloud that then you start doing things to try and, like, I've been doing stuff to try and numb, like, myself from it.
Yeah.
But this is a much nicer way of actually dealing with it.
Well, and I love that. Okay, so you're noticing that you tend to numb out. I wonder if we are actually related, because control is a huge thing for me too, and that's exactly how I tend to respond to it. But I love how your first response was, I just need to feel what I'm feeling. Right, that inside you there is that knowledge that, oh, actually numbing is the other th numbing's the protective behavior, right? Feeling is the healthy behavior.
Oh, so much harder though.
Yeah, so much harder. And temporary, always temporary. And for us, controlling birds, it's tricky, right? Because we want to be in control of that, and feelings can feel a little bit like they're not controlled. And even if they get really intense, they are always temporary. Our wise, wise bodies will process them for us. So you can trust your body, you can trust that.
Thank you.
How are you feeling about this now, Julia? How are you feeling about your dilemma?
Yeah, I feel, like what we were talking kind of at the beginning, where it's about showing the client that they have choice. That's exactly where I feel like at the moment, where it's like, okay, there are actually multiple ways to handle this. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it's like fixed, but there are ways that I can approach this that make it feel less like huge.
Perfect. That, and that to me, as your coach in this moment, feels like a really good outcome.
Yeah, it
You seem
is.
a bit more like, right, okay, I've got some shit to do.
Yes.
A bit more resourced.
Yeah, definitely.
Perfect. This was such a beautiful example as well for this group, because I think all of us can relate, right? I don't know about you. I think I have this exact thing in my notebook somewhere, this exact experience. Yeah. Is it everyone else? Are you sort of feeling like, oh yeah, totally. Yeah. Amazing. Thank you, Julia. That was
Thank
beautiful.
you.
Thank you. Okay. So, oh, so sorry, that share was going on the whole time. So I just want to like check in with folks. So that is what I would do in a coaching session with someone, right? I would just take them through that container and help them to see all the different voices that are going on. You can do this like just if you're doing a virtual session like this, you can use a whiteboard, or you can write it on a shared screen, all of that kind of stuff. But it can help just so you can share the information that can really help people. Because it's important to be able to kind of see it so you can interrogate it. I'm curious if anyone has any like questions around that process, what if you want to ask about thinking about this for yourself or for your clients, did that seem that seemed doable for you, useful? Anyone want to share anything that's coming up for them? Any notes you took? Okay. So this is in the sage part of the compass. And the idea behind these tools is always about helping the client feel like they're more resourced than when they came in. I noticed that, and Julia, stated this, it's not fixed, right? The thing's not fixed, and that's not the aim, right? The aim is, does the client feel more resourced? So they feel more kind of able to move forward. Sometimes that's just about getting over one hurdle. But something meta is going on in that process. It's not just about feeling the resourcefulness. It's then when they take the action, creating new evidence that they can do the next thing. right? So it's like a sense of self starts to expand and change at the same time. I'm wondering if anyone else wants to, we're all a bit quiet today, so I'm just checking in, but does anyone else want to be coached today or have a dilemma that they're interested in exploring? I'm super happy to spend 20 minutes with someone else. Feel free to raise your hand. Amy, hi, lovely.
Hi.
Good to see you.
Nice to be here. I'm like, this is what happens when my hand, I'm like, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, and my hand's up before. So my current challenge that I wrote down is I've just come back from a week's holiday. It was lovely, nice break, and I'm like, I need another holiday. Like, and it's I've not even started back at work yet. So the thing I'm feeling is this, like, what I wrote down was feeling burnt out, never rested, or interestingly, having my own time, which is not true. I don't have kids. I don't, like, I have a job, but I don't not have time. So is that kind of being on that hamster wheel treadmill thing, and being on holiday made me realize how much I want to bring that feeling into my daily life as much as possible, so that it's not like limping through until I'm on holiday, basically.
Yeah. That's a beautiful dilemma to be playing with, right? I think most of us totally understand that. Yeah. When you think about I'm just gonna share the screen if I can find the button. When you think about the compass, where do you think it sits? This dilemma. Where is it for you? What's the part that's feeling a bit hammered right now?
I mean, I think so. The critic is my loudest,
yeah, kind of
just driver. But I think what's coming up, what feels like it's coming up, is the self-worth piece, the boundaries in particular, and the fact that earlier you said that idea of, like, I can't remember exactly what words you used, but the idea of being okay with taking up the space you need to take care of yourself. That kind of, I struggle very much with boundaries, particularly emotional ones. So I don't know, that's what's coming up for me.
Yeah. Okay. That feels really true for me as well, really coherent for me. And I think they all get involved, right? Because when it comes to boundaries, in order to kind of put a boundary in place, we're doing it from a vision for ourselves, right? We're doing it from a place of self-belief, like, this is what I want my life to look like. I'm envisioning a life that looks different to now, and I need the boundary to help me create that, right? To remind me of that. And it's about self-acceptance, accepting that that you're knackered and that you have a limited capacity, right? Mm-hmm. Accepting all the different emotions and parts of you that are going to be present in the resentment and the feelings of, you know, knackeredness and all of that, and maybe around putting the boundary in place as well. Yeah. Also just, you know, trusting yourself that you can honor this, right? That it's a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it all kind of gets involved, but I'm with you. I think when it comes to this kind of stuff, boundaries are great to play with. Yeah. Cool. So would it be helpful for you if we did that now?
Yeah, I'd love that.
Cool. So I'm going to just take you through the kind of boundaries process that I use. And it's a kind of who, what, where, how type question, series of questions. And I guess I'm curious to know, like, who is the relationship with? And it might be a what here. Like, is the boundary with a generic work Or is it something or someone more specific?
I think there are two things come to mind there. One is with specific people. So my team, like I'm not good at not taking on their stress, or, and I will admit this, what I perceive to possibly be the stress they might be feeling, right? Like there's all sorts of layers there, but like there's an emotional boundary there with specifically the people that I support as a manager and what they're dealing with. The other boundary is like a weird, like, it's not just work, but there's like this weird they, and it's not even individuals at work. It's not like I have overlords micromanaging me. I have like a lot of autonomy, but there's like a, this is the way it should be. Like there is an unnamed out there judgment that if I'm not doing the right thing, which would be overworking or working all the time, and I'm not. Yeah. So is it some weird generic?
Finish that sentence. If you're not doing the right thing, then what happens?
Well, the words that just came up, I don't know where they came from, but then I fail.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're talking about two different boundaries here, I think. And there may be more. There's probably half a dozen lurking in here, Amy. It's going to be an amazing way to practice this stuff, right? But so there's one with your team. There's one with the amorphous they, right? Yeah. And that would be kind of interesting to explore. There's probably others too. And I would offer that it may be worthwhile to look at all the places in your life that feel depleting to you right now.
Mm.
The people, the places, the things that deplete you. And you can just look at this as, you know, it's a great exercise to just have a little feel around, does this need a boundary or do I just need to say no, right? Something like that. But also, like, what's going on in that? Like, what am I making that depletion mean? What power am I giving to that person? Or what assumptions have I made about them? All of that stuff.
Mm. I love that question of what am I making that depletion mean? Because often, I'm reflecting as you say that, there's definitely a feeling that, oh, I haven't done enough in this relationship. Because like it's the, like I, if I was doing it well, I wouldn't be depleted by it, right? Like it would just be easy.
Right. Which is a faulty thought, isn't it? Right. It sets you up for all kinds of shit. So, so that's a great little exercise to do, to just explore where is the depletion in your life and what do you make it mean, particularly about you? Because boundaries work is just for us. No one else even has to know that we're doing this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's quite separate from conflict, I think. So which one do you want to choose to look at today?
I think this might be a can of worms, but the amorphous they. And I think the reason for that is because it feels like it does connect to that idea. You said boundaries are for us.
Yeah.
And Julie and I have talked about this, but I struggle to show up for those boundaries, for those things for myself, like on a daily basis, even when I might do something for someone else. So it feels like that's that external thing.
The harder one.
Oh, great. Okay.
Cool. Yeah. It's great. Well, harder in that it's just, it's less concrete, right? Like you've pretty much named, oh, I'm borrowing fantasy future stress from my team. Right, so I'm going to leave you to figure that one out, because I think that's a pretty straightforward one for you to go through and to really look at, where am I trying to rescue my team here?
Yeah.
And how do I check in on myself to stop myself from doing that?
Yeah.
When we're borrowing other people's experience, it's usually a boundary issue.
Yeah.
So So the who is the amorphous they? When you think of the amorphous they, what do you what comes into your mind? Do you have any images or memories or anything that comes up, feelings in your body?
The only thing that comes to mind, and I can explain this in a quick story, is I'm not a very tidy person. And I remember one day I was sitting on my sofa and the living room was a mess. And I was feeling, it was a Sunday, I was feeling incredibly stressed. And all I wanted to do was read my book, but I couldn't get it out of my head that this was a mess. And I kept thinking, this has to be tidy. This has to be tidy. And then I had this moment where I was like, says who? And it's almost like there was somebody, it's going to sound mad, but somebody like looking in through my living room windows.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like when I'm working, it's almost like this, it sounds mad. It's almost like there's someone on CCTV watching me. Like there's a sense of like, there is somebody monitoring.
Yeah.
I don't mean this in a conspiracy theory. Like I don't, but like, there's like a sense that everything I am doing is going to be graded or judged in some way. And that it's all being added to my like report card.
I'm reminded, I don't know if you've ever watched The Good Place.
Yes. Yes.
Right. When you get to heaven and they whip up your scorecard, how many points did you get? Do you get
there to we are.
The good place?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are we Alan here? Okay, cool. Right. So there is something or someone is tallying up your goodness levels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I wonder if you've felt that before. Is that like something that's been familiar to you for your life?
I mean, sorry, turn my phone off. At the risk of keep coming back to school, that's what I was good at school. You know, it was in an environment that was quite academically challenging and everyone was expected to behave, and you got the goals. Stereotypical gold star kid, you know, you behave yourself, are you in line, are you, and everything kind of narrowed into that experience, and that I'm feeling that similar feeling.
Yeah, that makes so much sense, doesn't it?
Yeah,
that's a really formative time in our lives when we're figuring out like, how does the world work, what are the rules, who do I need to be to make it here, you know. So it sounds like you were very good as a gold star student. You were very good at sussing out what everyone needed from you and then making that happen.
Yeah, which is interesting you should say that, because I have realized recently that I can be a little bit of a chameleon. I'm a bit different depending on who I'm with. I know everyone is, but like depending on who needs what, I will be a slightly different version of myself.
Yes. Yeah, because then you get to meet their needs.
Yeah.
And then they can give you a gold star.
Yes, because I need the gold star.
Yeah. So this is all about, I'm feeling this is all about some external validation. An external, like, you're doing good, Amy. Well done. Keep going. But be better tomorrow. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Great. So the amorphous they, look. Would it help you to leave them as the amorphous they, or would you like to have create a bit of a character around this? Like, I'm wondering if there was a teacher that kept you on your toes during that time at school.
I do think keeping it as the amorphous they would be helpful for me, because there's a sense in because I realize how not absurd, but it is an amorphous they. Why am I holding myself accountable to this? So I think that's helpful for me.
Cool. Perfect. And we've got a bit of a sense of, you know, this hasn't been created in a vacuum, right? This has happened. This has been created over time. And it may have started out with a couple of teachers, and you've probably added in anyone in authority.
Yeah, yeah.
That you wanted. And maybe anyone that you wanted some validation or a gold star from.
Yes.
Right. So you may, you know, and the reason I say if you put a character around that, it could even be Team Gold Star, right?
Well, so actually when you said that, one image that did come up was like a jury panel. So maybe I could, there's like a, you know, like
little the gold star jury. The gold star jury.
Yeah.
Okay. I love that. The reason to make this a little bit fun is A, that's quite creative of you to come up with that and to have that. And I sense you've got quite a sense of humour about this as well. But I think as well, it's like helpful to be able to go, oh, there's my gold star jury watching me through the window. I'm just going to leave the mess. It'll be okay, right? Like it's a way of kind of keeping this real for yourself that can be reasonably fun as well as you're just working through this, right?
Yeah.
What is it they're doing, saying, or being that doesn't feel good to you? What's the voice in your mind?
I think the thing that doesn't feel good is that it comes back to that kind of core refrain of it's not good enough, or it's not enough, or it, like, it's that kind of constant, because they aren't giving me gold stars. Like if they were giving me gold stars, I think it would be great, but they're not.
That's right. Yeah. What is it? It's not good enough, or you're not good enough?
Well, yeah. So I think it's like the version I hear is it's not good enough, but that's the you're not good enough. You're not enough. You're not enough. There we are. Yeah.
Right. Nice. So this jury panel, you it's an impossible standard to meet, right?
Yeah.
It's the built-in perfectionist constantly judging.
Yeah.
So putting a boundary around this part of you, this inner critic, really, what it feels like to me. Perfect. Great idea to do it. So what's the boundary? Oh, sorry, what's your current response? Let's get that out of the way first. When this happens, what do you currently do?
I think I find myself in a cycle of kind of, depending on my energy levels, there's usually like a collapse, kind of, I just can't do anymore. Right. And then there's like a, but I'll show them. And then I just kick it in, and it's this kind of like collapse, and then no, push, and then collapse.
Right. Yeah. Collapse, push. Collapse, right? And that kind of cycle.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, it goes the other way. Great. That's really, and that happens on a micro level, it sounds like, right? Like this room is not tidy enough for you to read your book. So you collapse. I don't want to read my book. And then you push, clean up the room, and then collapse again.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
As well as how you approach work in general.
Yeah.
It sounds like. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Perfect depiction. So what is the boundary you want to set? The way I like to phrase this is, when you do or say this, jury, this is what I will do to take care of myself.
I don't know if this is a boundary, but what first came to mind was that I will give myself a gold star. I don't know if that.
Yeah.
That is a boundary or not.
It's the start of one. For sure. Yeah. How might that work? And maybe just go back to you Sunday afternoon on your sofa. Lounge is a bit of a mess. You hear the voice. This is not good enough. How in that moment do you kind of take care of you, give yourself a gold star?
Yeah, it's funny. My first thought was, well, I could pick up one sock, you know. Like, <what's that?"
laughs> Yeah, right. Love it. And if you get stuck, just say.
Yeah, I'm stuck. This is where I really get
Yes, completely, totally understand. So a couple of things come up for me around this. Like, I wonder, like, if you imagine you've been living with this boundary for ages, like you no longer hear the jury. So it's maybe 6 months' time where the jury doesn't even occur to you anymore because you've just been practicing this for so much. You're listening to your healthy self more than the jury. So you're lying on the sofa on a Sunday afternoon and you just want to read your book and the lounge is a bit of a mess and you hear that voice for the first time in a while. Like, I wonder, what would you do from that kind of healthy, recovered self? What do you imagine that you would do?
So the first thought that comes to mind for me is a sense of like the like an objective. Yes, the lounge is a mess. Like it is.
Yeah.
Or in my perception, it is. Yeah. But it doesn't then have to mean anything. Like that can exist out there in the world, just like my messy living room can. But it doesn't need to impact me.
Yeah. I'm picturing you whipping off a sock and throwing it into the pile, right?
Yeah.
That's the image that comes to my mind. Like,
yeah.
So and I guess this is the thing, right? There's an acceptance that it's okay for me to take this time to read my book and for the lounge to be messy.
Yeah.
And that applies everywhere, right? It's okay for work to want me to work extra hours and for me to say no. It's okay for my team to meet a sense that they're getting stressed out and for me to let them handle that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's okay for me to take care of myself to the point where I have so much more capacity to help my team in a different way so that they feel like, here we are a team. Maybe we do things slightly differently, right? So it's not like we don't want to get into a binary, but it's more like it's okay for both is kind of the idea here, right?
Yes. Yes. Because that's the feeling that came out was like, if I'm sitting on the sofa and everything's a mess, it's that, yes, things are a mess and I can read my book. It's both, not my, because as a perfectionist, as you'll know, my thinking is black and white. It's like, it is literally all everything or nothing.
Yes. Yeah. So, and this is the thing, right? I think the gold star comes sort of at the end. Like there might be a boundary that's like your self-talk, like both can exist. Right? I used to be a perfectionist. And the one thing I know about perfectionists is that all or nothing is like catnip, right? So it may, you may even, as we're doing this, I'm not suggesting you are, but you may even have this thing of, well, we're talking about a sock, so I can probably handle that, but actually it doesn't really count unless it's everything, right?
What makes you think that?
It's just about paying attention to the smallest, most doable thing, because if in that moment you say to yourself, both me reading and this room being a mess can exist, I used to be a perfectionist, but we're not doing that anymore because it burnt us out. So we're just going to lie here and read the book. Even if you have to read this page three times, being very aware of the mess now that you've seen it, right? But the point here is to practice both being able to exist. The boundary is, I don't have to jump as soon as I hear that jury. Mm-hmm. I don't have to respond immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, so you practice responding in a different way.
Yep. Yeah.
So the boundary is about, for me, it feels like I used to be a perfectionist.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's that kind of self-talk. Oh, no, wait, I used to be a perfectionist. It's not how I'm identifying right now.
Mm-hmm.
From now on. This is, we're interrupting that pattern. Didn't work for us. Beat us out.
Yeah, I like that, because so one of the things, like, I used to say I am a perfectionist, and then I tried changing that to I struggle with perfectionism, but like that's still in the present. I used to be a perfectionist. It's like, oh no, we can actually do something about this.
Yeah, you're resourced.
Yeah,
and the these very small moments where you make a tiny decision, I'm just gonna lie here and read the book. The world does not end. No one knocks on the window. Although it would be very funny if that did happen. No one knocks on the window. No one is. And then I get to give myself a gold star.
Yep.
You may even, just for funsies, go buy yourself a massive packet of gold stars. And every time you do something that's not perfectionist behavior, put it in a little notebook. Yep. Get points if there's unicorns involved. It's just make it fun, you know? Make it fun, because then what you're doing is you're replacing the good place tally, right? Yeah. You're giving it to yourself.
Yeah.
So it's like you're going on that kind of critic diet, you know? Oh, we don't eat that anymore. Don't listen to that anymore.
Yeah.
If you do this, what will you gain for yourself?
If I can, like, this is just, it feels like so much. And the reason for that is I struggle to give myself any sense of gold star, big or small. Like, I struggle to give myself that. So if I can get to a place where I can give myself that, that will be huge. But I think also one of the things I wrote down was I just feel like I'm never getting rest, because I'm not sitting on the sofa resting. I'm thinking about all the other stuff.
Yeah.
So I could rest. Like, I could stop that collapse and push kind of crazy up and down, and just be a little bit more kind of balanced, I guess.
Rest, balance, peace. You know, Amy, I honestly think that, like, for me, the purpose of this work is so that we can work with someone who can sit in the quiet of their own presence and be happy, okay, peaceful.
Yeah.
Like, this is, for me, is like the end goal.
Yeah.
Of all of this work. Because when you can sit with your own company and feel okay, like the life you have created.
Yeah.
Like, that's, for me, that is the gold star.
Yeah.
Oh, bloody point. So for you to be able to create this in small ways for yourself each day, amazing.
Yeah,
I'm with you. And it can sometimes, you, like, you might find, like, your credit's like, well, that's not very big and interesting and gold star worthy. But I think it's about, like, oh no, I used to be a perfectionist who would believe in that all or nothing crap, but now I'm not talking like that to myself. That's not how we do that here.
Yeah,
because we want to replace that voice.
Yeah,
and it's the opposite, isn't it? You're not enough. Keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep doing bigger, better, more. This is just rest. Just be balanced, be peaceful with yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's doing versus being, which is coming up for me a lot.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Do you have any, like, thoughts or feelings around establishing this? Like, maybe what might happen, or where you think you might shit on yourself a little bit or get in your own way? Yeah.
I think you hit a nail on the head when you said, like, this isn't big enough. I think that's what's going to be, like, if I give myself a gold star, it'll be, well, this isn't big enough to give myself a gold star for. Or, like, oh, you had this thought, you haven't fixed it overnight. Like, it's just going to be that narrative that comes through, I think. I have to be aware of.
So what will you do when that comes up?
Well, I think see, if I can see it as an opportunity, and exactly as you said, if I can see that as like a, oh, hey, that's the moment that I would have seen as a thing I needed to listen to. But if I see myself as I guess it's like kind of stepping back, seeing that as a part of myself who would have reacted, but being in my healthy self and being able to say, oh no, that was the perfectionist side of me. I don't need to react to that.
And then give yourself a gold star.
Give myself a gold star. Yes, because that, actually, having said that, that is definitely worth a gold star. Yeah.
It is. Yeah. It's everything. It's everything. Yeah. How will you know you've honored this boundary? What will be different?
I think it will be moments, flashes of kind of contentment and peace and being able to slow down a little bit.
Yeah. Love it. Love it. Yeah. Slowing down. And I think that's quite useful to recognize, right? That it's both the moments of contentment, the kind of like those, like you described, the flashes, like, oh, actually, I'm good right now. That positive self-talk that comes in those moments, but also that overall sense of slowing down.
Yeah.
How's that feeling for you?
I love it. It feels really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You feel resourced to deal with your amorphous jury that doesn't exist.
Yeah. In this moment, I do feel a buzz. I feel a different kind of energy.
Yeah. 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 That's your healthy self going, yes, gold star, please.
I'll go find some stickers, unicorns.
Definitely. Unicorn notebook.
Yeah.
Stickers, like really. And I think the more playful that you can be as someone with a big critic, right, which is all about perfectionism and doing it right, the more like imperfect, compassionate, playful, silly, childlike you can be. There's a real seriousness sometimes to us perfectionists, right? Mm-hmm. But when you can bring in some play and some fun and just let it be very childlike, I think you can sort of, and you already have such a fabulous sort of sense of humor at yourself, right? And cause that's everything. That's such a massive natural resource that you have. But yeah, it will help. It will really help.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So good. Thank you.
Brilliant. I'm so glad we got to do two such fantastic examples, Julia and Amy. Thank you so much. It was brilliant. I know this was a bit longer, but I think it's just helpful to maybe see how this goes, right? That it is quite a natural conversation. Like, I've done this for ages, but I've just had the notes up on my screen so that I didn't miss anything, right? Because I can drift off sometimes. So, you know, like, let yourself just play with these tools. Let yourself practice them out. I think they can be so lovely to work with, even if you're not working with clients. Like, you have a friend who's, you know, brings some dilemma and you can just say, hey, I'm doing this thing, would you mind if I practice this tool with you, because I think it would be really fun, and just let them enjoy it with you so that you get to have a little go with these tools and see what feels good to you. So each of those tools that I took Julia and Amy through probably took about 25 minutes, something like that. So I'm hoping that you'll be able to choose a dilemma that you want to take to a practice pod, and that you'll have the opportunity to coach and be coached. All right. So, and basically we go through the same process. So you just decide between you, like, what would be the most helpful thing? Have a little read over the different tools and then just choose one. You may even go in saying, I really want to do a heart map today. Can we do that? Right. And here's what I've brought. So have a read of the tools, play with the ones that feel good to you. And we will talk next week about working with this stuff with our clients as well. Okay. Anyone got any questions or anything just before we close? You all okay? All right. Thank you so much. Just know that the discussion forum is there all the time if you have anything that comes up. All right, everyone, have a magnificent Tuesday. Amy, give yourself a gold star. You did brilliant. Julia, you too, love. Thanks so much, everyone. Okay, see you next week. Bye.